Golf Smarter Premium number 509, published on October 6, 2015. Now it's time to confidently take your new swing from the range to the course with Jim Vanettis.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Oh, that was a great way to say welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Jim.
Fireworks in September.
Fireworks in September in Maine, in northern Maine, right?
That's it.
Awesome. When do you head back to Southern California?
Probably going to be, when I get frozen out. You know, temperatures are going to drop quick here. I'm in a seasonal cabin, you know, so it's not winterized. So the Mother Nature will send me home.
So actually, you're going to be driving back to Southern California. Do you plan to stop and see students along the way?
Yeah, I haven't announced it yet, but I have had a lot of requests on the southern route, Florida, Georgia, Texas, back up into Colorado. You know, there's been a lot of requests to go that way along the east coast and head south. So that'll probably be the route, but I haven't announced it yet. So
guess what?
I let the students essentially plan the trip. You know, I find out where they're at, and I go see them.
Yeah, well, guess what? You just announced it.
Uh-oh.
This is public.
Cool.
And so if people want to track you down and meet up with you while you're driving across the United States, although we don't exactly know when yet, I guess the best way to go is to sign up for sign up on your website at jimvanettisgolfacademy.com.
Yeah, it's a subscription-based website. It's just $30 a month, and you got total access to me, and we make sure that we get your game right.
Awesome. And when you say total access to you, you're not kidding. I mean, you are available.
I'm available. I have students call me on the phone all the time, and it's just, you know, it's the more a student communicates with me, the quicker their learning process. And like I keep saying, a student reaches a point where he gets a lock on this swing. He reaches a point where he could take it for granted. So the more they talk to me, the quicker we get to that point. So I really encourage that because I want them to be able to not only get to that point, but start to work on other stuff, like really refine their game. You know, I really think that the average golfer should be a 6 handicap. If you're playing once or twice a week, I think a 6 handicap is well within your abilities. If you just, one, understand that reducing swing thoughts down to the least common denominator is really important. So the swing thought I teach is stillness. And maintaining still weight produces a lot of high quality in your shots from putting to short game to long game. And then at that point, you know, you then get to start to work on other things. You get to start to shape the ball and control trajectory and hit some flop shots and learn how to play fairway bunker shots and focus in on strategy and course management. You know, it's so important to be able to look down a fairway and say, look, I know I'm going to hit a solid draw. Now, if I play it up the right side of the fairway, that's going to give me the best angle for my next shot. And that is so fun to be able to do. Not, you know, that's what pros get to do all the time. But when an amateur gets to do it, you know, when an avid golfer can know he's going to hit a good shot, see the shot he wants to play, and then hit it, it's such a rush for me to be able to watch that. I love seeing my students just hit super high quality shots and get to play the game on a whole different level.
Month or two ago, whatever it was, I played in a pro-am on the web.com tour, and I was just amazed at the precision of when they said, as a golfer, we'll always go ahead and say, that's my target out there and hope we get there. These guys set a target and they nail it, like every shot.
Nail it.
It's amazing to me.
Those tour players are awesome. I mean, think about it. There's over 80 million golfers in the world, I think. When you're talking web.com and you're talking PGA Tour, you're talking about the top 300 and some golfers in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the best of the best of the best. And yeah, they play some beautiful golf. But isn't it interesting, with as much as they practice and as high quality of players as that they are, we still see a lot of fluctuation in their consistency. You know, obviously Tiger's a big example, but before that was David Duvall. Before that, Ian Baker Finch. You know, you see players that have really accomplished a lot in the game also struggle with the game. And so that just tells me, as great as those players are, they could be better. And the way I understand it is through stillness. You know, there's a lot of movement still in tour players' swings. And the best tour players, the best ball strikers, have the least amount of movement. Louis Oosthuizen is a great example. He hits out of his front side. He's hitting out of his left side. It's also why he struggles as a putter. But stillness, when you can really reduce it down to stillness, I think once a tour player gets a hold of stillness, I think that'll substantially lower scores.
Mm. When have you struggled and with golf, and what was it that you were struggling with?
Well, you know, isn't it funny how no matter how good you get, you always can find flaw in your game?
That's golf.
That's golf. So I think, you know, from a plus 5 handicap all the way up to a 25 handicap, I think the frustration is pretty similar. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, the plus 5's frustrated because he can see how he could improve upon that refined skill, and it becomes frustrating to you know, get the details right. Whereas the 25 handicap, he's just struggling with the basics, but the frustration is there. So yeah, you know, I struggle with the game. That's what brought me to a different understanding for the swing. You know, I was a big student of the game and a good athlete. So I would be able to execute a lot of conventional teachings, but I'd be disappointed because, you know, some swings were one dimensional where you could only hit one ball flight, you know, and a lot of it was just fades. And, you know, I can hit a fade. Anybody can hit a fade. I want to be able to hit a draw every time. And then when I need to hit a fade, make the subtle manipulation that's required to hit a fade, because that's actually quite easy. But
so what,
you know,
what did you struggle with?
Well, I guess since we're being honest here, I'm not the greatest putter. You know, I'm a ball striker. That's mm-hmm. kind of how I was able to develop the depth and this understanding of the swing. Putting is fine with me, but it's not something that I truly enjoy.
You love seeing the ball fly.
I love hitting shots. I love, you know, so I'm a lefty. I'm a left dominant player. I, you know, obviously to play at the level that I've played at, I can putt fine, but, you know, I'd rather hit the ball. You know, when I close my eyes, I'm hitting shots. I'm not making 10-foot putts. I think a guy like Jordan Spieth, when he closes his eyes, he's making 10-foot putts, you know, and that's why.
And 12-foot and 15 and 20-foot putts.
Any putt, right?
Yeah, right.
And that's you know, I think that has something to do with him being such a great putter. But, yeah, you know, I struggle with the game all the time, but that's what drives me, you know, every day to, you know, every day I go out and I look for more stillness. I try and get more still every day. Bruce Lee talked about daily minimization. Hmm. Try and reduce. And if you can reduce and get the same result or better, that's the definition of efficiency. So I'm always looking, you know, I always treat it, every time I go on the range, I treat it like it's the first time I've ever played. Now, it's not the first time I've ever played, so I'm actually able to you know, hit some really high quality shots immediately. But I really respect stillness. I don't go out there and just assume I'm going to hit it good. I go out there and I stay still, and immediately I start hitting good shots, and then immediately I warm up into my practice session or into my round.
I want to talk about ball position for a moment here. We picked up on it a little bit in the last episode. So now we've got a weight shift 70-30 to our front side, and our body position is as if we're at the top of our swing. Where is the ball in relationship to our feet or the center of our body? I know that with other methods, you know, you'll have with the driver, you have the ball way up front, right in the inside of your right instep, your left instep, your front instep for a right-handed golfer. And then for your wedges and things, the shorter clubs with the higher loft, you're going to have the ball farther back in your stance, closer to your back foot.
Sure. So ball position.
Yeah.
Ball position in the swing that I teach is just an opportunity to manipulate trajectory. So I start everybody with a stock ball position, which is where all irons are played off of the forward chest for a right-handed golfer, off of the left chest, which would be equivalent to about, you know, 2 inches inside of your lead foot. That's for all irons.
Really?
For all driver and fairway woods or rescue clubs, they go off of the the lead heel. So if for a right-handed golfer, it would be off of the left heel.
Wait. Do you hit a hybrid like you hit an iron, or do you hit a hybrid like you hit a wood? Because isn't a hybrid kind of like an iron with a lot of meat on it?
It's a cross between the two.
Yeah, it's a hybrid.
You know, remember, I'm talking about stock ball position.
Okay.
So I want it to start. I want all my students to start with irons off the left chest, right-handed golfer, woods, fairway woods, driver, and hybrids off the left heel. Now, once you get that down as a stock ball position, that's where you get to start to move the ball position to hit different types of shots. And that's kind of the beauty in this swing. You know, in the swing that I teach, because of stillness, the golfer is the constant. That means the ball can move. In more of traditional teachings, they really limit ball position. You know, I remember Tiger just talking about only playing three different ball positions. And that idea that the ball positions are limited, think about it. If the player is moving a lot, he can't also have a lot of different ball positions. Mm-hmm. But if the player is reduced movement so that he can stay still, now he becomes the constant. So the ball can become the variable. The ball position can become the variable. And you could change it up based upon whatever shot you want to play. You know, if you driver obviously gets to stay really consistent with ball position. If you play it off the deck or if you play it off the tee, you should play it right off the left heel and that's it. Once you get into higher lofted clubs, though, with your irons, you can play every ball position in your stance to create not only different trajectory, but different spin. So there's times where you can play a wedge back in the stance and it's going to make it fly low and it's going to have a lot of spin on it. So it's going to land, take one big hop and check really fast. You know, you can start to really manipulate your ball flight simply by changing ball position, not by changing your swing. You know, in the traditional swing, they say finish low to hit it low, finish high to hit it high. You know, I could finish low and hit it high. I could finish high and hit it low. So I don't really think that that's necessarily a good correlation for how to change trajectory. But if you play the ball back in your stance, the club is de-lofted. So naturally, since the club's been de-lofted, you're going to hit it lower. Hmm. Play it forward in your stance, the club's got its truer loft, so it's going to go higher. Sure. Anywhere in between is a different shot, different spin.
Sure. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I like that.
Cool. And that's all predicated on the idea that the golfer is the constant. Because you're not moving, now you get to manipulate other things. But if you're moving, it becomes really hard to also now change ball position and kind of get creative with shots. You kind of get forced into just playing one shot over and over again and hoping that works.
You know, it's, wow, it's not really an epiphany because you've been pounding it in on me, but I'm really thinking about how many things we have to think about when we address the ball. How many different body positions, but you know, like put your elbow here, make sure that it stays in, make sure your head is tilted. Don't forget your shoulders. You got to lean in this way. There's so much going on.
So much going on. That's what makes it hard.
Yeah. That's why we screw up all the time. And then we get angry with the way the ball flies and it's like, no, it was you.
Right. And you know, I think what's really revealing is to watch Tiger go through what he's going through. You know, he's obviously a great golfer. He's obviously got a phenomenal mind for the game. And yet he's learning a different technique. So consequently, he struggles too. And he looks shocked when he hits a bad shot. You know, when he stubs a chip or he chunks a chip or blades a chip, he looks shocked because he's thinking he's got it. Yeah. But, you know, he's still learning all these new movements, and he calls it release patterns. You know, he's learning these different movements, and so he's not quite familiar with them yet. Eventually, I'm sure he'll get familiar with them, but it's a very different swing than he used to make back in the days when he dominated. I could tell you this much.
Absolutely. But he's somebody, like so many of us, that it seems to be really happy on the driving range and can't take it to the course.
Bingo. And we had just talked about that. You know, we started to talk about it. Taking it from the range to the course is just about knowing that you can walk off the range and know how to hit it great in stillness. Because now you can go down to, you know, people talk about training aids, right? And using a training aid or a swing aid. I do not suggest using any kind of training aid or swing aid because you can't use them on the course. So you're going to start to rely upon it on the range, and you're not going to be able to access that same sensation on the course. Instead, I teach this. You are the training aid. You have a skeleton. Your skeleton is made to move very specifically. The hinges and the joints in your body work in very specific fashion, which is why if we don't use them right, we get hurt. So if you can preset your body on the range in this closed position where your weight's on your forward foot and maintain stillness, you're now taking the template that is your anatomy down to the first tee. And so all you have to do is do the same thing again. So you don't have to try and feel like, you know, I see, oh, Michael Breed on the golf channel.
Yeah.
Golf, with all of those, he's got that barrel full of different things that have nothing to do with golf, like hockey sticks and hula hoops and you know, the umbrellas and all
the,
kinds of
Stuff. The water weenie things.
The water weenie things. And they say that they go, have it feel like you're doing this. And it's some different activity, you know.
Does that drive you crazy?
Oh, it drives me crazy because, you know what, it has nothing to do with actually hitting the ball. It's the reason why those tips don't work. It's because it doesn't feel like you're swinging a water weenie with that strapped to your waist. It actually feels like you're staying still. It feels like you're swinging on an inside-out path because you closed your body down to create this inside-out path. And consequently, it feels great and it feels simple. So, you know, for my students, a big thing that my students get to do is not only do they get to hit good shots, but they play well in tournaments. They play to their handicaps. And this is because all they have to do is stay still. And you know what? If you think about it, in tournaments, when players get down to the end and they start to feel the pressure, they always talk about how hard it is to move freely under that pressure, right? So when I get under pressure or my students get under pressure, it forces more stillness. And since that's what we're trying to create, you know, I've played my best golf under the most pressure. And it's because I'm looking, you know, because of the most pressure that I'm under, I'm scared. You know, I have fear, and that fear causes me to find stillness. And that stillness causes me to hit the ball sweet. So that pressure forces me to play better. If I'm playing casually, you know, I might get a little bit, yeah, I'm always still, but you know, it's definitely heightened when I'm under pressure. And if that's because being under pressure causes you to not be able to move very freely, then that's perfect with the swing that I teach.
Okay. What kind of video are we going to be able to look at and hear a tip from you at the end of this episode?
How about taking it from the range to the course?
Perfect. Okay. So, again, JimVanettisGolfAcademy.com. Jim, I'm just having so much fun. I know we're recording these all at once, but we've got weeks worth of content here that is so compelling. The worst part of this is that people can't watch you the way I am right now on Skype. You're so animated. You make Michael Breed look like he's on decaf. that was too much of an exaggeration because it's so frenetic, but you are so passionate about this and you've got so much energy behind it. I can't do anything but believe you.
Oh, cool. Well, I hope you believe me because of the logic. You know, I'm passionate because it's, you know, the logic is really what really makes it sing to me. You know, if you want to hit a ball that's not moving, maybe you shouldn't move also.
It's definitely worth thinking about, isn't it? Hey, thank you again for your get well messages. Recovery from my torn calf muscle is coming along nicely, actually. Last week, I was able to restart my yoga practice, hoping to bring back some of my flexibility. And now that the pain has subsided enough, I've started incorporating Jim's body positioning into my setup and do some short game swings. Hopefully by this weekend, I'll be back at the driving range and ready to play 18 in about a week or two, as long as the weather holds. Yeah, it's going to hold up. Most likely, I'll be riding a cart for the first time out, especially if my playing partners insist on playing one of our very hilly courses here in dry, dry, dry Northern California. As for the effects of the drought, even on the private country club that I live next to, the sides of the fairways and the walk between the tee box and the beginning of the fairways has become hard, dry dirt. Any non-essential area of playability just isn't watered anymore. It was back in September of 2014, just over a year ago, episode number 452, that we spoke to Don Chemiletos of the Presidio Golf Course in San Francisco about his efforts to cut back on water and keep the course playable. Don wrote to me back in February of this year, so that was, what, 5 months later, to say, this is what it said in his email. With the governor's mandate yesterday, I've gotten a lot of calls regarding the water reduction efforts we discussed last year. Both the San Francisco Chronicle and NBC Bay Area are going to do stories on the course, though yours was ahead of the game, unquote. Thanks, Don. You know, maybe it is time to bring Don or just get a different head groundskeeper on the show to discuss their progress and plans to keep the courses open and playable as winter approaches. Heaven forbid that we see the kind of flooding that has occurred in South Carolina. My heart goes out to all of you who live there and have family and friends there. Because if California were to get that kind of rain, which we don't, but if we get something nasty, if El Nino really hits hard, we can forgo earthquakes and hope that our state doesn't wash away in a mudslide. Stay tuned for that. I'd like to ask once again for your help. I've set a goal to be fully recovered and participate in the Walk to End Alzheimer's on October 24th in Washington, D.C. Currently, more than 5 million Americans have Alzheimer's, and that number is expected to grow to as many as 16 million by 2050. Please consider making a donation by sponsoring me on my walk. Your generous gift will help the Alzheimer's Association advance research into methods of treatment, prevention, and ultimately a cure for Alzheimer's. For those millions already affected, the association offers care, education, support, and resources in communities nationwide. I'll continue to put a link in today's show notes and mention it in the next two episodes before I leave for D.C. Any amount you can donate is tax deductible and greatly appreciated. Thank you again for your help and continued support. Now, let's get back to Jim Venetis of JimVenetisGolfAcademy.com. with another of his exclusive videos that Jim has extracted from his subscription platform and is allowing us to see it on our video channel at youtube.com/golfsmartertv. Obviously, this is just the audio, but I'll be sending out a video link in our next email, so if you're not on our list, send a request to be included to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com. And don't forget to like our Golf Smarter Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Periscope at Golf Smarter.
As you're developing your swing, where I want you to develop the swing is in this process. I want you to start with short clubs and I want you to start with short swings. It's the reason why in the school, I start you with the bump and run discipline. It's because that is the smallest left-sided swing you're going to be making. And then we go to the pitch, which is a little bit longer left-sided swing. And then we work into the full swing, but I have you working quarter swings, half swings, three-quarter swings, full swings. It should make sense to you that this is just the natural progression of what's going to allow you to learn this as quickly as possible. You're also going to be doing this on the range. I know it's fun to play, but all too often, as somebody is learning this technique, they go to the course too quickly. Okay, think of it like this. Think about it as a boxer or a martial artist learns his skills. He's going to learn how to do certain techniques, but that's a big difference from actually going into the ring and fighting against somebody. Golf is the same way. The driving range is your training area, where you're going to learn how to develop the skills that you need to then go into the battle of being on a golf course. So don't rush to the course. In fact, stay at the driving range until you feel that you confidently have developed the skills that you need to go out and play. And then once you get to the course, bear in mind that it's very different. And whatever successes or failures you have, they're opportunities to learn. Just like a boxer when he goes into the ring. He might be very strong and he might be well trained, but he still has to learn how to avoid punches. And when you get to a golf course, the golf course is so organic, and as weather is changing and pin positions are changing and conditions are changing, you also have to learn how to avoid punches and know when is the right time to execute certain shots. So use the process of the driving range to train your skills. And then it'll be much easier for you to then develop this swing and be able to take it to the course. Now, on the same subject, there are times where golfers have a hard time taking skills from the range to the course. And this is very common in traditional theories, because in traditional instruction, you're using rhythm, tempo, timing. You're managing movements throughout the swing. Well, on a driving range, it's a very unrealistic situation. You're hitting the same club off the same type of lie in quick succession. This doesn't happen on a golf course. On a golf course, you're switching clubs, you're changing lies, and it's happening maybe every 3 or 4 minutes. And so when you feel like you, like in traditional theories or traditional instruction, when you feel like you have it on the range and you go to the course and it's not there, the reason is you're not creating the same situation on the course as you are on the range. And this is why stillness and holding your position is so important. If you set into this position and you maintain stillness on the range, it's very easy to transfer this skill to the course, because there is no rhythm or tempo that's being managed. There is no timing that's required, so that you as you develop it on this very predictable situation on the range where every shot is the same and every lie is the same, and then you get to the course and things start to change, it becomes very foreign and you could feel a bit out of sorts. But when you set and hold your position, well, when you go down to the first tee, all you have to do is continue to set and hold your position. And it doesn't matter if you hit a shot every 3 minutes or every 30 seconds, or you have some big delay when you come to a par three and you find that there's a two-group backup. You're not going to lose your swing, because your swing does not require you to have a familiarity to your rhythm, tempo, and timing. Instead, your swing only requires you to set and hold a position. So taking it from the range to the course, make sure first you build your skills on the range, and once you're confident that you're able to hold your position on the range, then hold that position on the course, and you're going to find that you're going to perform just as well on the course as you do on the range.